Greetings and welcome to Baron Craze's Visions of Horror, episode number 12, covering the week of March 19th to March 25th. Now, normally this show would have aired on the March 26th, but a couple reasons why it didn't. Number one reason was this would have been the weekend of the New Jersey Horror Con, and it would be crazy to release the show with so many of my listeners at the con and not tuning in. Not what you're saying, hey, Baron, they could have picked that up anytime. That is true. But it's not the sole reason the show did not air. The primary reason the show didn't air is the same one that affected the week before it. You see, I put intro music into the show and I put some outro. But that was it. I didn't put any other music into the show. This became problematic to a person we have that kind of puts everything up for us over at Blog Talk Radio, which we're very happy for them doing this for us, and they listened to the show before it aired. Well, you can guess what happened. There was no music. They figured there was a problem with the file. So, lo and behold, they contact me back and go, where's the music? I don't understand. And again, I said, well, just like the week before, I didn't include it. I thought I'm making the right decision here. I thought it would be more streamlined. I said, no, we want the music. It helps break up everything, and it's always a jolly good fact to see if you can come up with music that can tie into a film. And then we know it's all going to become extremely impossible one day. One day you're not going to be able to get it done, Baron, and that's the day we're all looking forward to. That basically the movie and the music do not tie together at all. So with that being said, here I am, redoing the entire audio for the show. So, it's just how it is. Now, this is also affected in another area. I have not released the Visions of Horror column that we also put up on the site. And, of course, since I haven't put up the column, I haven't put up a few other things, too. These are all leading to things getting backburnered. And needless to say, we're releasing all the Visions of Horror shows pretty much right on top of each other, so your enjoyment of all the horror possible. So with that being said, obviously we open the show with Ground Meat and Pathological Science, excuse me, was the track. The band is found on Facebook and also Bandcamp. All right, so starting off on March 19th, a Sunday, the film was The House That Vanished from 1973, rated R, 1 hour and 36 minutes long, and this was 50 years old. I know. It's incredible. Same age as me. All right. Well, okay. So I have like about a month to my actual birthday. All right. So this is the genre of crime and horror. The director was Jose Ramon Larraz. That's Larraz. The writer was Derek Ford. As for who starred in the film, well, we have Andrea Allen, Carl Lanchberry, Judy Matheson, Maggie Walker, and let's see here, we've got also Peter Forbes Robertson. The company put it out with us is AIP, American International Pictures. But this film was not released officially by them until 1974. Kind of an odd thing. But let's move along. So the summary, we have a young model and her petty thief boyfriend find their way through the English fog to a backwoods manor in hopes of looting it. And what they find instead is murder. And when the model attempts to find the house again, her efforts come up to, for naught, if you would. Interesting little story, I guess. Out of 10, it got a 4.9. And it was originally released on April 18th, 1973. But for whatever reason, the people who chose me to watch the movie chose this as the date instead. That sometimes happens. And usually the reason for that is often because they are looking at the number of films and people are always picking them in advance. And they're trying to, I guess, work out a schedule where it becomes manageable for me. All right, moving right along. Some taglines for you. Now, I'm going to be very honest. There's maybe one on this list that I can live with, and the rest I can't. They're far too long. So let's get into them. All right, and you'll definitely be able to tell with this first one where it is too long. All right, so this first tagline is 40 words long. That's right. 40 words. Here it is. Is it too soon to talk about 1972, that time Paul and Valerie fell in love at first sight and began searching for a place to have an affair, and they kept searching until they found the house that vanished? All right, 40 words. But wait, we're not done. The next tagline is, in the great Hitchcock tradition. All right, I mean, I like Hitchcock, but are you trying to tell me that you're trying to use some Hitchcockian into this film? All right, sounds interesting. So in this one, we're now calling for something else. So first two we got problems with. We're going to get into all the reasons why in just a moment. The next one is 40 words long. Are you planning an affair? We can give you 7 good reasons not to have your next affair at the house that vanished. And they are all dead. Okay, 1. 2, George. 3, Martha. 4, Ted. Linda's number 5, Ronnie 6, Alice is 7, and then one more for a bonus, Larry. Now think about that off of those. We're going to get back to them. I want to get the rest of these done before I tear into these taglines. It's terror with a twist. I can handle it. It's 5 words. I can handle it. And lastly, if you have ever lived alone, you will never forget. I guess they basically supposed to be above the phrase, the house that vanished. All right. So let's talk about the first one and the third one, the 40 and the 41 words. Taglines, taglines, taglines. As a tagline doctor, I can speak with total professionalism and total experience on this. You're talking 3 to 5 words. You can maybe squeeze a 6 into that, depending if you use a the or an of. All right? But that is it. Your tagline should fit normally straight across the page, either at the very top of the page or in the middle of the page. Now, you could steal away, it has happened, if you wanted to make that tagline kind of drift down the page. So maybe one word at the top, one in the middle, and one at the bottom. Or maybe they kind of trail down, falling down the page on a slant or something. That's always a little creative. It gives the person more of a reason to stand in front of your movie poster, longer to look at it, and that's what you want. But if you give them 40 words to read, forget it. It's over. Done. They're not going to do it because it's too wordy. It's too long. It takes too much damn time. And people's time is short. A movie poster's job is to capture your attention quickly, to get it, to snag it, to make the art very creative or interesting. Understanding that men, okay, are the visual creatures, if you would, very visual. So they're attracted to visuals. Well, women are often considered for the more intellect part. Your tagline needs to be something of creative persuasion, if you would. These things have to marry together. Now, when you have 40 words, it's not that. You're even giving me your log line of your film, which, by the way, it's not even a log line, because log lines are 25 words. That's it. Can you sum up your movie in 25 words? The end. That's it. Here, 40-word taglines? Oh, please, they're too long. They're too wordy. They just drag down. I mean, think about this. You've got your movie poster, okay? It's a 24 by 36. That's a full-size movie poster. And this 40 words is on it? Oh, God, the thing's a mess. Now you think about taking that same tagline, shrinking that all the way down to a DVD cover. Where the hell does the title go? How does it not all look like word salad on the cover? I mean, it's impossible. Now, let's talk about that second one. In the great Hitchcock tradition, what did I once tell you? I told you this. It saves you money if you just listen to the simple rule. Tagline doctors, when in trouble, will go back and pick on a name. So, if we're just thinking about a film, right? And we're thinking about, I don't know, say Tom Hanks, or for the horror crowd out there, Kane Hodder. If we were to throw Kane Hodder's name in the killing fashion that made Kane Hodder famous, that kind of thing. So now we're making you understand, the kills in this movie are like the famous kind of kills that Kane Hodder's performed on screen or something. Things like this. Or we refer back to a character. The kills on here are in, you know, Jason Voorhees' wheelhouse or something like that. Or Jason Voorhees would be impressed with these kills. That sort of thing. So we're now going for the slasher crowd. We're going for the Friday the 13th crowd. And we're trying to make you think, well, I like Friday the 13th and I like Jason Voorhees. Therefore, I will like this movie. So what are we doing here? Well, again, this is a crime horror movie. So we're talking 1973. We're now about 1 year after Hitchcock's release, Frenzy. So Hitchcock is back in the news again for Frenzy being a pretty brutalistic type of movie. So by stating the word Hitchcock, it makes anybody who likes Hitchcock go, you know what? I like Hitchcock. I'm going to like this movie. This is done in the Hitchcock tradition. I'm going to like this movie. I like Hitchcock. I like Hitchcock films. I'm going to enjoy this. That's the entire mentality put right into there. That's what's happening right there. So out of all of these taglines, I can deal with it's terror with a twist. The last one, if you have ever lived alone, you will never forget ... Well, wait a minute. If you've lived alone, okay, even for a short period of time, you remember that. I mean, you do. You remember what it was like to come home to an empty house, no one's there. You're going to sit down, have a bowl of cereal in your boxer shorts or whatever else, right? Watch a little TV and then go to bed. I mean, it was lonely. It wasn't fun. You know, basically you're saying, if you ever live alone, you'll never forget the house that vanished. You know, I don't get it. I don't like it. It's a downer type of tagline. It's not upbeat. It doesn't give you anything. It actually, if you think about it, could actually become a depressive tagline. And now people are going, you know, I remember that. And it wasn't fun. I didn't like it. I wasn't enjoyable for it. So why would I want to watch a movie that was bringing back a negative? You don't want to do that. So that last tagline doesn't work either. Look at this. I spent probably a good 7 minutes on taglines of a film. Oh, wow. All right. Anyway, this particular film, we did see it on a, I think it was on a, I'm looking at myself and looking off in his face trying to figure out. It was either on a DVD copy or an old VHS. I can't remember which one. I didn't put it into the machine. But I know we had a lot of people over to watch the film because, again, they went, it says Hitchcock on it. Okay, that's the reason we did it. All right, so let's get into my feelings about the movie. This is a relatively obscured movie. It's a film that's almost a lost title, if you would. It is just about there. It's got that element to it, okay? So the Gallo type of films with some kind of sordid, sinister, stalking, black glove killer. You know, you've seen this on the Gallo films. But again, you know, we do have some tones of obviously some eroticism is put into the film with your slashing elements followed up behind it. We do have your classic horror shots that are occurring there. That voyeuristic filmmaking style that Hitchcock made so famous in Psycho is brought into it, of course. There is one really brutal moment of some serious murder that does occur in the film. But can I say that that's the whole reason? It depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for something obscure, something off the beaten path, yes, this will then encourage you to watch it. Is it dark? Hell yes. Grainy? Oh yeah. The sound not too great? You got it. But it does tend to lag. There's something, I don't know what I can really say. There's something about the film that I found to just make me yawn twice during the movie. And if I yawn during a movie, it's kind of like the person who keeps shifting their seat during the film. and can't get comfortable. They're not a matter they can't get comfortable. They can't get comfortable to stay awake. They're shifting around, really moving a lot. They just can't, you know, zone in on the film all the way. And that's what you have here. Figuring out who the killer is not going to be hard. It's really not a mystery. That's why it doesn't say a mystery. But we do have that bloody violence in the film. So that does help to try to keep the audience engaged. But how engaged? I wouldn't really want to go too far out there. Hitchcockian, very, very basic elements. Very basic. I can't say this is a Hitchcockian film. What they are saying in the tradition of Hitchcock. So we do have a few elements there that you can tell are definitely from Psycho, but or not Psycho in per se, but the Psycho themes, and of course also if some of Hitchcock's lessons in filmmaking are presented there. All right, so with that, we're going to stop here and let's play some music. So we're actually going to be playing a track here, if I can find it. Here it is. Lordy is the band, and the track is House of Mirrors. We're going to play that, and in fact, right after that, we're going to play a band called Bark, like in the dog barking, but Bark, and the track is Wild Thing. So you guys enjoy both these tracks, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Have you
right, so again, first there was the band Alordi with the track House of Mirrors. They're found on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And then we played a track there called Wild Thing from the band Bark. It's not that wild thing that you guys were all probably thinking about. This band is found on Facebook under Bark666 and Instagram, Twitter, and Bandcamp. And the things goes out to, and we pulled this up for you all, let's see here. The label is Sound of the Hound Records. This album was released on November 10th of 2017. I had to give all this information out as part of the permission, if you would. I want to give the thanks to continue to Wolf over at Sure Shot Works. And Works is spelled with an X at the end of it and not a K. So there you guys go. I throw all that information out to you. And anyway, welcome to March 20th. Monday, that's right, Monday. All right, so on that beautiful Monday, we watched the film Wild Things from 1998. I know, Wild Thing, see, it works all well, doesn't it? Well, this film was rated R, an hour and 48 minutes long. It's up for its 25th anniversary. Crime, drama, and mystery. That's right, this is a film that falls into the otherworldly category. I know, and people always wondering, what is in the otherworldly category? Always, I give you a prime example of a film that would fall into it. A couple, actually. Shadow of a Doubt, it's a Hitchcock movie. What's another one for you? Vertigo, would definitely, from the 58, would fall into the otherworldly category. The Love Witch, I think that's from 2016, would fall into the category of otherworldly. So you get a good understanding there. The director is John McNaughton, who is best known for his film Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, which came out in 86. Anyway, the writer for this was Steven Peters, starring Kevin Bacon, Nev Campbell, Matt Dillon, Teresa Russell, Denise Richards, and Robert, why is this not working here? Robert Wagner, oh, one more, Bill Murray. The film that put it out, Columbia Pictures. The summary is, a police detective uncovers a conspiracy behind a case involving a high school guidance counselor when accusations of rape are made against him by two female students. And so this film got a 6.6 out of 10 and was originally released on, see here, March 20th of 98. All right, now the taglines. Here we go. One of these will, you know, let me just get into them. First tagline is Get Wild. All right. Now, the next one, I actually have up the German words they put up for this, but we have the English version. It says, You're young, you're sexy, you're murderous. All right. Then there's, They're dying to play with you. Be wild, be wicked, beware. Okay. All right. They can turn you on or turn on you. The last one is a little longer, but it's nice. Really out of that one, I don't like the first one. Wild Things Get Wild. I'm sorry to say, but that's weak. That's really, really weak. You know, you could have just had the title at that point, Things They Do. You know, get wild, and you could just, things they do. And maybe when you presented the word things, you could have slanted it a little bit. Make it a little wavery in the title there. Because you can do that with your taglines. You know, play with the fonts, if you would. All right, so then, there you guys go. The budget for this was $20 million. It grossed $30.1 million. All right, a little trivia about the film. So, here we go. Let's start with Nev Campbell. Now, interview she did with Entertainment Weekly. At the time of the film's release, she and Denise Richards and Matt Dillon all got slightly drunk on tequila in order to pass by the nervousness of doing their three-way engagement type of scene, if you would, all right? Their little lovemaking scene. Despite prominent billing, Bill Murray gets only about 20 minutes of screen time. So, there you go for that. That's why I almost forgot to include him. Now, the film does reference a few films. namely Diabolique from 1955, Jaws of 1975, The Craft of 96, and of course Scream from 96. This film was followed by Wild Things 2, which came out in 2004, Wild Things Diamonds in the Rough in 2005, and then Wild Things Foursome in 2010. As for the film, I watched it on the DVD, and my opinion of the movie is definitely in the otherworldly category. Look, this is a fantastic example of what can be achieved by not worrying about the substance and having the film play straight for entertainment value. We have a film that really takes the elements of the star's beauty, if you would, the locations, and uses a location. Remember, location, location, location. If you got a great location, whether it is a place of splendor and richness to it, to a derelict, broken down, beat up type of building, allow them to speak the volumes they have. Now look, if you're just having very ordinary type of location, there's nothing really fantastic about it, that's fine. That's okay. That is going to happen in life. So then your location is not that big of a deal, and now you got to rely on something else. Hopefully your actors can make the characters come alive. If that is the situation, then please take the time for an extra week of prepping yourselves while your cast gets into character mode. Allow your characters, allow your actors to almost put that character on as its own costume and allow them to interact with each other. If you can, allow your actors to be able to stay at the location they're filming at. Again, whether that is a big, spacious type of mansion to the derelict building, you know, have something on site for them to stay in. If the building's not, say, safe enough for them to sleep in. That way they're getting to wear the location onto everything else. In addition, the film has a lot of plot twists to it, so you got to have that. So again, if your film doesn't have the location and you don't have maybe the time for your cast to really get there, then you've got to offer up something else and give you some plot twists that are workable, that you can really make the audience believe in, then that's going to make for a much more enjoyable film, which Wild Things is. But basically, Denise Richards, she really does give a really wonderfully charged type of performance in there, something that you can really latch on to. And again, the film is thoroughly entertaining. There is. Look, does it contain a couple steamy scenes? Yes, all right? But this isn't what you would call cheap B-movie stuff. This was really well thought out, a nice executed storyline, good cinematography, wonderful lighting, sound was on there. I definitely recommend it for those who are looking for something otherworldly. This is that film that's going to help you through that. And hence, I enjoy seeing it again. All right, as we get ready to move into our next show, film that I saw, I want to play a little piece of music for you all. We have Derek and Brandon Fleischer. That's F-I-E-C-H-T-E-R, Spooky Times. And then Meduzal, 1975. That's M-E-D-U-S-A, 1975, all one word. And their track is Into the Night. So enjoy these two tracks, and we'll be back momentarily. Thank you. right. So again, that was Derek and Brandon Fleischer. That's F-I-E-C-H-T-E-R. Excuse me if I'm mispronouncing the name there. With the track Spooky Tales. They are found on Facebook and also for both of them. So we would look up Derek and their last name, as I just spelled it to you, with the number 2. And then you would go also for Facebook, for the letter B, then name again, and a number 2. You can also then find them both through Twitter. So definitely look them up that way. And they've got, of course, a Bandcamp page out there. So definitely check that out. Then it was Medusa 1975. That's all one word. With the track Into the Night, they are found on Facebook, also Bandcamp. Thanks goes out to the label. It's SVART Records, found on Facebook. Got a .com page out there and Bandcamp. Got to put all that information out there for you. So anyway, it's March 21st, Tuesday, and the film is Medusa Touch. See how I did that one? Medusa was the name of the band. And in this case, I made that be the tie-in, if you would. You could tell. Ooh, Baron's stretching it there, folks. Anyway, the film came out in 1978. It was rated PG, an hour and 49 minutes long. 45 years old. It's horror and sci-fi. Director was Jack Gold. With the writers John Brierly and Peter Van Greenaway. It stars Richard Burton, Gordon Jackson, Lino Ventura, Lee Remick, Harry Andrews, and Marie Christine Barrault, B-A-R-R-A-U-L-T. All right, and the company that put it out is ITC. Not too sure what that stands for, but there you guys go. The summary of this movie is simply a telekinesis novelist causes disasters simply by thinking about them. You know, I have to be very honest. As soon as I read that, I thought of this person I met when I was teaching the Hitchcock classes. When was that? I think that was back in 22. Yeah. Yeah, the spring semester 22 taught a class on Hitchcock, and this one woman, was all about, you know, I just want to think about using lightning to, you know, kill people. And I thought, it's telekinesis, and she argued with me up and down and left and right. No, it's not, but yes, it is. So, just a little sidestep there. Anyway, film came out March 21st, 1978, and out of 10, this got a 6.9. Now for some taglines. Pretty much two taglines. One is far too long, and the first one is too long, and the second one is just way, way too long. All right, so let's get into them, shall we? The first one. Richard Burton is a man with the Medusa touch. He has the power to create catastrophes. Okay. So first of all, by putting the name Richard Burton into it, we're already giving away part of the plot line. We're telling you who the person with the power is. So we're already telling you that. And also, we're just not, it's not descriptive enough. It's not really telling me anything. If I already know what the film's about. This tagline doesn't do anything for me. It's too long, and it's just, you know, you're using the actor's name that's in the film in your tagline. It tells me you didn't know where to go. The second one is even stranger than the first. You guys are just going to love this one. Telekinesis, all in caps, : a mental force that enables this man to move objects and control events. Science cannot explain the awesome power of the mind, and nothing can control it. 28 words. And think about this. It came out in 78. We've already gone through telekinesis with, you got it, Carrie, right? That came out in 76. So we already know what this strange word is. We don't need you to tell us anymore. So, you know, it doesn't work for us. You're telling us what he can do. We already know what telekinesis is. We understand that. So, again, you're treating the audience like idiots at that moment. And, you know, it's also telling me that whoever came up with the taglines really didn't understand the movie. Didn't know which way to go with the film. And that's why you got this. That's how this is kind of situated. Now, originally, this little bit of trivia for him. The literary source material for Medusa Touch was a horror thriller by author Peter Van Greenaway. Now, I kind of went into a little research on this for everybody, so, you know, we can have a little fun with it. This movie can be considered part of the late 70s, early 80s cycle of movies that dealt with telekinesis or psychokinesis. And those are, you know, Carrie, like I said, from 76, The Fury from 78, The Sender from 82, Firestarter 84, Scanners 81, Ruby from 77, Jennifer 78, Patrick 78, The Dead Zone 83. I'm trying to think here. I know there's some more for you guys out there. I know I'm not putting these in any order. I wasn't going to do that anyway. There was a parody film, I guess, that kind of used it. I don't want to give it too much credit, but it's Zapped from 1982. Now, there's a couple reasons that some of these films have always been omitted, and I wanted to put them back into the mix, and I don't think it's right that they got omitted, if you would, okay? And the reason I think they're getting omitted, if you would, is because they're TV movies, and they go, well, that's not the same thing. Well, too bad, pal. It is. You have to include it. So the Spell from 77, also The Initiation of Sarah from 78, and Midnight Offerings from 1981 would definitely be included in that. Now, one film that a lot of people like to include, I don't, and I'm going to give you the reason why in a minute, is The Omen, or the Damien the Omen 2, to be more precise, from 1978. And the reason I don't include this film is while Damien is able to use his mind, if you would, to cause problems for people, he's not exactly using telekinesis. He's using more of a spiritual sense. Things that are happening around him happen around him because they've been prophesied to happen. That's not telekinesis, that's religious horror. So you can't kind of combine those two elements like that. They don't work. I mean, they just don't. I'm sorry. They just, it doesn't work. You can't kind of include that into it. So when people do that, I think they're having a real problem with that. Now look, there's probably some other films out there that I missed or something. And also, I do not, and I know others were going to get mad at this, but I do not include vampire movies into this mix. And the reason I don't include vampire movies, okay, again, they're not really moving objects. They're using that mental skill of theirs to manipulate the person into doing things, a kind of a mind control, if you would. They're not really moving a lot of objects around the room. I mean, at this rate, you could say, if you want to use telekinesis, then you would have to say that Star Wars, all right, from 77, would have to have telekinesis in it because, hey, you know, I'm using my mind to move an object, so that's telekinesis. Now I got to include that into the mix. I mean, how many of the Star Wars fans out there have ever thought about that kind of avenue? See, it can get a little crazy depending on which way you go with that. But yeah, there you guys go. I just wanted to throw that out there. It's going to give you a little bit more filler. As for where I saw this movie, basically a friend brought over a DVD of it, and that's how we watched the movie. So it was like a little private showing of it. You know, nothing crazy about the film, nothing that said, oh, I've got to buy this today. No, I'm sorry. You know, that's not going to work. It's not going to happen. So you just have to deal with that in life. You know, it's a movie that's out there. So I guess now you want my opinion, right? All right. Okay, so here we go. How do I put this? A lot of people still try to combine this with a few other elements, and this is where I have problems personally with the movie. During the 70s, we got a lot of devil conspiracy movies occurring, right? We got The Exorcist, The Omen that are happening there, right? And at this moment, they're combining the typical paranoia and the disasters, and they wanted to combine those into this film and trying to say, see, if you like these movies, you'll like this. Again, I really can't buy into that entire premise that people were putting forth into it. I mean, I watched the film, obviously because it was picked for me, but I can see why people picked the film. They thought that this movie was combining those elements into the movie and making a bigger spectacle of it all than what was initially put forth. So there you go. Now, Richard Burton, he does give an impressive performance. I do like that. And I think it's pretty good what happens there. I guess in a way, how do I put this? It doesn't translate easily. It takes a bit of time to maybe warm up to him and his character. And that's really a lot. I mean, if you like him as an actor or anything, you're going to really enjoy the film more. If you don't, you're not. I don't mean to be so cut and dry with it, but that's really what you have here. It is a slow pacing film, but it's done in this way to slow the film down so much to show the order of the psychological breakdown of the lead character. This is what one could say is a slow burn movie. So, yes, it's a horror movie, and no, it's not an otherworldly film. It's just going to be really, really slow kindling here. This is going to take time. And the filmmakers, I think, in a way, were trying to build a creepy atmosphere, then bombarding us with effects and other things like this. And that sometimes works, and that sometimes doesn't, especially if your creep factor doesn't make it engaging, and it gives us more fright than anything else. So, you know, it does try to give you that element of conjuring forces beyond our earthly control or understanding. And it works for a little bit, but then it flounders a little bit. It just keeps going back and forth, seesawing itself. So there are good elements in here. If you're looking for a film that has a slow burn to it and gives a build-up of creep factor and psychological aspects, this is great for you, good study film. And if you're not into that, then that's not going to work for you. This is a simply slow burn type of movie. It's going to take time to get to its moments there, especially that first act will be your true test of time with the film. So be aware of that. All right, so that pretty much ends out that film. So now time for another piece of little music here. It is the band Them with the track Ghost in the Graveyard. right, so you guys just heard the band Them with the track Ghost in the Graveyard. They are found on Facebook, Instagram, and Bandcamp. All right, so it's March 22nd, Wednesday, in the film Shudder from 2008 is what I saw. It's rated PG-13, an hour and 25 minutes long. It's got a 15th anniversary going on, and of course, it is a horror, mystery, and thriller. Now, as for the director, we're going to be using the Google Translator to help us out here because, let's face it, folks, there's no way that I can nicely get these names down correctly. So here we go. Hopefully everything is being queued up here. We're just going to jack up the volume a little bit louder in hoping that everything works. And let's go with the Google Translator. The director was
Masayuki Ochiai.
Of course. Obviously, I would have gotten that in at least 100 years. All right, now, as for the writers, let's get their names down here. There's going to be some, you know, interesting names that we never have gotten right, so the Google Translator hopefully can help us.
Luke Dawson, Parkpum Wangpum, Sofan Saptafizit, Banjong Pisanthanakin.
Yeah, you heard all that. Now, just to have it that way, that's just, you know, there's no way I would have been able to do it. I hopefully that pronunciations were maybe somewhat close. It is doing that into English for us. You know, we'll just have to see how that was. Now, for those who are just a little bit curious what it would sound like in maybe the more native language for it, I have no clue. I don't even think I want to try to do that because that may be really messed up. All right, one more. These are the people who starred in the movie, so here we go for that.
Joshua Jackson, Rachel Taylor, Megumi Okina, David Denman, John Hensley, Maya Hazen.
And there we go. So once again, we do thank the Google Translator for all its help in getting us through that little stumbling block. The company that put out the film was 20th Century Fox. And as for a summary, a newly married couple discovers disturbing ghostly images in photographs that they have developed after a tragic accident. Fearing the manifestations may be connected, they investigate and learn some of the mysteries that are better left unsolved. And hence, the film, connection to the music, Them, Ghosts in the Graveyard. Well, I picked it really for them being the mysteriousness, if you would, and the manifestations and such. And of course, the ghostly images, obviously putting that to the ghost in the graveyard. Hence, you see, there was a deeper meaning for that particular song into this film. Why? I don't know. I needed something to play. Okay, guys, lay off if it's not perfect. All right, out of 10, this is a 5.2. Release date originally for this was March 21st of 2008. We have two taglines. First up is the most terrifying images are the ones that are real. All right. Not too bad. I can get into it. You know, maybe if you had just changed it around and just said, you know, something like real terrifying images or something like that, maybe we could have gotten a little bit better. But I can go with it. It's a little bit longer than I like. But I can go with that tagline. The second tagline is, revenge never dies. Okay. How about revenge from the grave? I mean, think about that. I came up with that one. Revenge from the grave. You know, reaching out to harm you. You know, I mean, think about it. Reaching out to harm you. That's five. But again, you know, when you say revenge never dies, well, that's great. That's good. How about revenge from the grave? I mean, it's four. So, you know, there's a little, you could have some fun. Now, the budget of the film was $8 million. It grossed $25 million. Worldwide, it was able to gross $48.5 million. So, it did make its money back and then some. Now, it should be known that the film does incorporate a little bit of history into it. The phenomenon of capturing images of ghosts in pictures is known as spirit photography, a supernatural occurrence that dates back to the late 19th century. Now, this film is referenced in Stan Helsing's from 2009, which is a comedy, and also Demon Baby in 2015. It is a remake of Shudder from 2004, an American remake of the Thai movie. All right, so I saw this film on HBO Max, and a little bit about the movie for my opinion. Well, believe it or not, it's a good old-fashioned ghost story. All right. Now, I did not see the original, so I have nothing to kind of base this off of. And the, I think the rating, though, of, what is that, PG-13, that is a bit of a letdown. That I can understand why they probably did that, to have more of a mass sweep, if you would, for more butts in the seat, so to speak. By making it that, you get the teenage crowd, obviously. But I think it hinders on certain aspects. But it depends where you were going to go with it. So, but overall, I like that it was a good old-fashioned ghost story. And now seeing this remake, I mean, I'm obviously going to want to go out and find the original to watch that. And, you know, again, you haven't seen the original. I don't think it's going to really bother you, because, I mean, I enjoyed it. It wasn't a bad film. I was able to get a good understanding of it, and I just liked it. I liked that it had, was it original? No. Okay, it's really hard to have an original ghost story nowadays. It really is. But is it surprisingly good? Yes, it is. I think there are some times that people think about an original ghost story, but nowadays it's almost, if they're, how should I put this? They're a little too afraid to pull the proverbial trigger to make that movie because of the conditions of backlash that one can get from people. And not just one group of people. There's all kinds of people out there that have opinions about everything. So sometimes you get a little skittish. But I think really in horror, there should be no skittishness. You should just attack the jugular or attack the heart or go for the gut whenever you can. So hopefully more filmmakers do that. But for all intents and purposes, this is not a bad film to spend a little time with and to enjoy. All right, with that being said, I'm going to let you all listen to a band called AD. right, so we start off with the band again. Not too sure how to say this band's first name. It's A-N-I-M-A, then space M-O-R-T-E. Really cool band, by the way. The track was The Nightmare Becomes Reality. Band is found on Facebook and Bandcamp, so please go to Bandcamp and check out the artist's music. And if you can, please purchase it. Don't just steal it. All right, so it brings us to March 24th, Friday. For those who are saying, wait a minute, Baron, wasn't there a Thursday? Yes, there was, and there was no film on Thursday. The Baron had a few medical appointments to take care of. Therefore, by the time I got back, I was pretty much burned all the way down into the ground. All right, so the film was The House in Nightmare Park from 1973, rated PG, an hour and 35 minutes long. Obviously, 50-year-old film. It's a comedy horror mystery. The director was Peter Sykes, and the writers were Clive Exton and Terry Nation. Now, as for the stars, we have Frankie Howard, Ray Milan, Hugh Burden, Kenneth Griffin, and John Bennett. And the company put it out was Angelo Dash EMI Film Distributors. The summary for this is that in 1907, an actor is invited to perform in an isolated country house and becomes involved in a mysterious and dangerous set of events. The film got a 5.7 out of 10 and was originally done on its release date of March 23rd of 1973. The tagline, well, there's just one. It's a little bit long, but here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, for your horrification, don't see it alone. Bring the children. It's interesting. I like the part where it says, bring the children. That's a nice little play there, if you would. Now, it should be noted that, for a little trivia, this film was done on a real-life location, which is portrayed as the house in Nightmare Park, was actually the Victorian Gothic house called Oakley Court, which is situated near Bry Studios. Now, there is a bit of a few other things I should name to you. It does misquote the usage in the film and hails from William Shakespeare's Good Name in Man and Woman. Dear my lord, is the immediate jewel of their souls? Who steals my purse steals trash? 'Tis something, nothing. 'Tis mine, 'tis his, and has it been slave to thousands? But now, you know, this is all coming, of course, from Othello, Act 3, Scene 3. So just so you get an understanding here, the film misquotes here. I don't think it's really done on purpose. It's just perhaps what the writer or someone decided to implement into the storyline and maybe misheard it or misremembered it. You have to remember, it's 1973, and they don't have a way to look a lot of stuff up. And if they're not totally familiar with who said what and when and where, they rely more on their memory to give them the answer. Nowadays, we can verify what the source is material so we don't make those mistakes. And guess what? We still are making these simple mistakes that you can look up. We're not talking about anything complex here. If you're going to quote back for history of a major earthquake that happened, it's easy to look up. When did the earthquake happen and what was the magnitude of the quake? And what do I see sometimes? Miss the year, miss the amount, miss everything. I'm like, how hard was it to Google that information? So I'm not really, a lot of people criticize the film right off of this misquote of the William Shakespeare. However, you know, could you have done better in 1973? I doubt it. So why nitpick on such a minor issue? Anyway, I saw this film via I think we watched this one VHS tape that was then copied over to a DVD-R, so that's how we watched it. It is a very rare film. There's no question about that. It's a little bit bonkers. It's got a bit of a convoluted script, so you have to take that into it. And it's an acceptable haunted house vehicle for the comedy stars out there. If you're into your comedy and horror, then you can find this of interest. Again, it's a rare film. It is not a an easy movie to understand. And there's a lot of innuendos going on here. There's an endless stream of one-liners, and they're pretty unusual, probably compared to today's language and such. So they may not work very well with comparisons, and some people may find themselves a little offended by them. But you just have to be ready for that. You know, you're talking about a C-listed comedian, if you would, playing into this role that he was in. I'm talking about Howard, that is. And, you know, he tries to make the most of it, being invited to a mysterious mansion. And I you know, again, you have to understand the comedy and such of that time. If you don't, it won't work for you. So you have to go in this film with a very open mind to understand its originality. And let's face it, there is a lot of originality going on in this film. Again, it's 1973, so there's a lot of mischievous, joyful kind of play going on. There's a lot of weird twists that you probably won't really see coming throughout the movie. Again, the script is a little convoluted, but I think it's also going to go back to the one-liners that are like zingers, if you would, from comedy of olden. So if you're not into understanding the origins of comedy, then this is not going to be a film for you. But those people out there who are truly enjoy comedy and they want to hone their craft, they're going to probably find some pieces of this film to be find enjoyable. And this is going to be a film, again, you all must understand something, especially to a lot of the U.S. listeners. This show is going out, and it's going out worldwide, obviously. Therefore, we have fans of ours, of the Baron's Crypt, of myself, and, of course, the Vision of Horror work that are overseas, and they're going to remember this film, and they're going to go, oh, yes, I know of this film, I know of this comedy, I know of these references, and they're going to work well for me because I can remember them. But just as a student of comedy, if that's what you are, understand something. If you think about it, Jerry Seinfeld, for example, in his home, he has a room, a whole room dedicated to Alba and Costello. Everything they've ever done, every joke, everything there is. And a lot of other famous comedians out there actually, believe it or not, have filing cabinets. Seriously. You may think, oh, come on, they got it all on computer now. No. A lot of them still have filing cabinets and volumes of material in a room in their house where maybe their jokes are indexed by topic or even by year. You know, they learn a joke from, you know, maybe 40 years ago, and then they'll rework that joke into modern times to build off of a skit or something like that. And they have all this. I've literally been in rooms where a person is an actor, and they have all these volumes of information, screenplays. So they're always learning, honing their skills, learning certain techniques and such. So this film could work in that way. It is a lost treasure of a film. It is, again, extremely rare. So if you do find it, take the time to watch it. It's not that long, but you could find it somewhat entertaining. All right, with that being said, I'm going to leave you all here with another track from the band. Again, I still can't figure out how to say their name, so I do pardon me on that. I will learn it eventually. It's A-N-I-M-A with then space to Morte. I think I figured out the second part of it. With the track Corridors of Blood. right, so we've come to the end of the week. It's March 25th, Saturday. That's right. And the film was Corridors of Blood. See how that works with the music we played, Corridors of Blood? Just kind of marries itself together. Now, doesn't it? This film came out in 1958. It was not rated. 1 hour and 26 minutes long. Also on this day, I saw the dreadful film called Lizzie Borden's Revenge from 2013. A definitely DOA type of movie. But I'd rather focus my time on a 65-year-old film than a movie that we can all just shuffle away and never think about. That's right, that DOA movie. All right, so this is a crime horror thriller. And see here, it is by director William Day. And the writer was Gene Scott Rogers. Now it stars Boris Karloff, Betty St. John, Christopher Lee, Finlay Curry, and Francis D. Wolfe. All right, it was put out by MGM, and the summary for the movie, well, here you go. In an effort to revive the suffering of patients, Dr. Thomas Bolton painstakingly develops a opium-based anesthesia, to which he gradually becomes addicted to, in order to provide a continuous supply of chemicals to continue his experiments and support his addiction. He falls in with a den of murderers who use his signature to sell cadavers to local hospitals. The film got a 6.4 out of 10 and was a release date originally of December 1st, 1958 on a very limited schedule. The tagline, Tops in Horror. Okay, probably because you got Karloff and Lee in the movie. The budget was £90,000. So there you go for that little piece of information. And, of course, some trivia for you. Now, the film wasn't officially released until 1962. But it was filmed in 58. And, again, it had that one very short, limited output there. So, hence, that's why I put it right into 1958 and not into 62. The cast presented Boris Karloff with a signed broom when the production wrapped, and the censors successfully lobbied to have three scenes omitted. First was a close-up of the leg amputation. The next was Sir Lee's stabbing, which at the time he was not a sir, he was just Christopher Lee, stabbing the night watchman in the back. And third was Boris Karloff throwing acid. The censors at this time in 1958 thought these things were too extreme and should be done away with. And therefore, they were removed and then later on restored. All right. Now, I saw this film on a DVD copy, so that was pretty cool. And basically, how should I put this? My opinion is first to understand that this film was made and sat for 4 years before release. And you may think, wow, that sounds very duddish. That's a real big dud. No, the film is very good. It's just due to other situations, out-of-control filmmakers. That happens all the time. Why the film sat on a shelf for so long. Also, people are should understand that when these procedures were originally being done, people were wide awake and they felt everything during surgery, including the amputations. So now it is true that the first anesthesia did not come out to about, 1850. And despite his concerns and other doctors that didn't share his enthusiasm for the change, so Karloff's foolish begins to experimenting on himself and thereby becomes an addict to his own chemicals. So the film actually deals with a bit of history, if you would. You think about it. Long, long, long time ago, there was none of the medical treatments there are today, and you were wide awake for things happening to you. So you imagine the people who had to hold you down for the surgery. Basically, the object, I guess, in life was don't get hurt, Because if you go to the hospital, your mom would just make a trip right to the morgue, because the pain and suffering would be so great, you could never handle it, really, if you think about it. So, you know, I wouldn't say that the film is going to show all this gruesomeness. It doesn't for the time period. But you can imagine remaking this film today and showing all that kind of medical gore, if you would. It could be very interesting. It'd probably freak a lot of people out tremendously. But again, it's a film that is very old. It is not going to be for a lot of people. I would say it's probably something that fans of Karloff and Lee, they either have already seen it, they know about it, and they're fans of it. Otherwise, I can see how a lot of people may skip over the film, and if that is the case, then that is what happens. All right, so that basically brings us to a close for the week, and we're going to be closing it out with our customary Bloody Hammers. Welcome to the Horror Show.
Shame are so far out of range. The blame is left on all.